Former President Trump was aggressive in using inflammatory rhetoric related to border policy and immigration when he famously referred to bad hombres in late 2016. From an economic standpoint, that didn't affect relations between the U.S. and Mexico, but it did exacerbate a cultural wedge. That reality was, for some historians, reminiscent of the time of the 1910 Mexican Revolution, a period when immigrants from Mexico were beginning to have an enormous impact on this country. Kelly Lytle Hernandez writes about that and much more in her book, Mad Mexicans, Race, Empire, and Revolution in the Borderlands, and she is with me. Kelly, what was the relationship like between the U.S. and Mexico around 1910 and that period of the Mexican Revolution?
The relationship between the United States and Mexico at the turn of the 20th century was one that was growing ever increasingly close, really under the rule of the Mexican dictator Porfirio Diaz, and at the whim of U.S. investors who were entering Mexico and had bought up nearly a quarter of the Mexican land base and come to dominate key Mexican industries like mining and railroads and oil and whatnot. And so the relationship was very, very close, at least economically speaking. And when the Mexican Revolution seems like it's beginning to get started, that causes a ripple of fear across the United States that perhaps if Porfirio Diaz is ousted from power in Mexico, that would jeopardize U.S. investments in Mexico.
The title, I think, is important for some of our listeners to wonder about. Why is that title so apropos?
I'm glad you asked me about the title. So Bad Mexicans obviously is a very provocative term and kind of rhetoric. And historically speaking, Porfirio Diaz, the dictator of Mexico, derided the rebels, the Maguinistas, as so-called malos mexicanos, or bad Mexicans. So in part, the title comes from that, because the group of rebels that I'm talking about in this book, the Maguinistas, had been disparaged in this way. It's also a term that's used in the United States. In the early 20th century, Mexicans were, at least from the perspective of mainstream Anglo-Americans, were supposed to be quiet and docile and servile laborers, right, who would come and go from the United States and work. And those were the so-called good Mexicans. And Mexicans and Mexican-Americans who protested or rebelled against the social structures of the time, what many called Juan Crow, a cousin of Jim Crow, those folks were deemed to be, quote, bad Mexicans. And so because this book is about those rebels, the people who challenge social systems, I titled it Bad Mexicans.
Was that something that was just carried out by power brokers? Was it something that spread in a grassroots way? Even the idea of the U.S. Postal Service had some involvement there.
So in the case of this book, the perception that this group of organizers, right, activists, intellectuals, and cotton pickers and miners who were building a social movement to challenge Porfirio Diaz's regime, the perception that they are bad Mexicans certainly comes out of the regime itself, which names the rebels malos mexicanos, but also sediciosos, you know, seditionists, and other phrases. And it does, in some ways, this perception of them spread like wildfire. Everybody who's invested in protecting the regime disparages this group in that way. Now, of course, you know, this title, Bad Mexicans, I am signaling the rhetoric used by recent President Trump here in the United States, calling Mexican migrants, at least some of them, to be bad hombres, at the same time that he's calling to make the United States great again, make America great again. And the problem, there's many problems with that, right? It's a very dangerous rhetoric, but it's also problematic because not many people know much about Mexican-American history or the history of Mexican immigrants in the United States. And so they don't really know what he was stirring up and the depths of violence that he was stirring up with that kind of language. And so in part, this book takes us back to early 20th century to talk about the forms of racial iniquity and white supremacy that were impacting the lives of Mexican Americans and Mexican immigrants. That was everything from job segregation to educational segregation to housing segregation, but also extraordinary levels of racial violence. And so this book about the revolution in Mexico actually begins with a lynching in Texas. And that rhetoric about rebellious Mexicans, the so-called bad Mexicans or bad hombres, is all at the center of the story, and it's all that the Maguanistas were confronting.
At that time, when it came to the Mexican Revolution, how much involvement did the U.S. have, and did that cause a lot of problems?
Well, the United States government was very involved in what I call a cross-border counterinsurgency campaign to try to thwart the outbreak of the 1910 Mexican Revolution, in particular their activities against the Maguanistas. So what that meant is that the U.S. Department of War, the U.S. Department of Justice, the U.S. Department of Labor and Commerce, U.S. Immigration Service, the U.S. Postal Service, U.S. Marshals, and even the beginning of the FBI, alongside police officers and sheriff's deputies across the country, all work really closely with the Mexican government and with agents of the Mexican government, whether those be infiltrators or private spies who are hired by the Mexican government, to undermine the Maguanistas' social movement. The way that this looked is that they participated in campaigns to extradite Maguanistas back to Mexico. They participated in campaigns to deport as many Maguanistas as possible or arrest and imprison them here in the United States. And in some cases, even participated in attempted kidnappings and real kidnappings of Mexican radicals, members of the Maguanistas movement back into Mexico. So the United States government was actively involved in the effort to suppress the outbreak of the 1910 revolution, in particular, the revolution that the Maguanistas wanted to see happen, which would be of the most radical form.
It seems as though the Maguanistas were incredibly resilient. So how were they able to persevere? What kept them driving? Was it this possibility of a revolution or something more?
That's right. So the Maguanistas, who are led by a man named Ricardo Flores Magón, flee Porfirio Diaz's Mexico in 1904 and come to the United States. And almost immediately, they're being followed by the Mexican government spies and very soon by U.S. government spies and agents as well. Despite all of this, they're able to relaunch their dissident newspaper called Regeneración. They are able to establish a political party called the PLM. And they're even able to establish an army mostly of, again, miners and cotton pickers and farm workers who wanted to return home to Mexico but have access to land and safety in Mexico. So against the power of the U.S. and Mexican states, this extraordinary band of Mexican dissidents is able to construct a powerful social movement that brings everyone from Teddy Roosevelt to the U.S. Attorney General and others to respond to them.
That is Kelly Lytle Hernandez. She's author of Bad Mexicans, Race, Empire, and Revolution in the Borderlands. Thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you so much for having me on.